Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, hosted by MC 8 and Big Steel. It's every Thursday,
y'all already know.
A podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap.
Let's go.
Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hand Me My Purse is a production of iHeart Podcasts.
So I was perusing Lauryn Hill's websites, is what I said, but I meant to say interwebs, and found an old Instagram post of my own. And it is actually from Joe Leone is the author of the post, And at the top of the post, I wrote, let me put my glasses on. At the top of the post, I wrote a note to myself from myself. And Joe Leone wrote, I wish for you a healing love. I wish for you a peaceful love, a true love, a revolutionary love. A rejuvenating love, a prosperous love, a holy love, an intentional love, an effortless love, an extraordinary love, a joyful love, a cosmic love, a prophetic love for always. And I loved it. And I love when Facebook reminds you, excuse my voice, it's a little squeaky, reminds you of things that you have said before, you have posted, because it kind of takes you back to a certain time and reminds you of who you were, what you wanted, what you thought about. And it kind of levels your, helps you to balance some things out or get into alignment. So I'm glad for that. And I wish that for you too. As a matter of fact, I definitely do. For always.
Tell me when. I can't see the thing behind me. Okay.
What's up, y'all? Welcome to Hand Me My Purse, the podcast. I am Mimi Walker, and I will be your forever host each and every single time you tune into this podcast. So go ahead and get comfortable. Get yourself a glass of your favorite beverage, whether that's a vodka soda with a splash of grapefruit juice, an ice cold bottle of Dr. Pepper that you put in the freezer for about 20 minutes so it has some ice chips in it, or just a hot cup of black coffee. Go light yourself a candle, some incense, or burn some sage, and just get ready to chill out and have yourself a good time. Because it's time to have yourself a good time.
Thank you.
What's up, friends and kin? It's Mimi, Resident Auntie Supreme here. Hand me my purse. And today, I am actually not sipping on anything. Let me tell you why. Actually, in this moment, I'm not. But about 10 minutes ago, I drank some tea that I had sitting on my nightstand because it's really late. It's really, really late, and I couldn't sleep. So I said, let me get up and be productive other than laying in the bed and scrolling on the internet. Let me get up and do something productive. So I got up and I said, let me just record. How about that? And I did just drink some tea, and it was a lavender and chamomile probiotics tea. And I also had a raspberry leaf tea bag in there because sometimes when you're a girl, you need to drink raspberry leaf tea because it's helpful. Let me tell you what it's good for, ladies. So let me just say this. It is very, very helpful for women. It is loaded with antioxidants. It helps with your digestion and digestive support. It says here will relieve mouth ulcers, sore throats, and gum disease, alleviates inflammatory conditions, menstrual cramping, and water retention. That's why I drink it. Also, I drink it because it's supposed to help with balancing your hormones. It's great to drink during your menstrual cycle, of course, for hormonal balance, but it is, it has some properties that help with blood clotting. So you may bruise a lot easier, which sucks because I fell the other day and my leg is all bruised up. But it's really good for helping to helping to balance your hormones. And it has tons of antioxidants. And it says here it also may help to lower the risk of developing cardiovascular disease. So all in all, I think it's great to drink. So that's what I was drinking on, some hot tea a few minutes ago. And doesn't sound that exciting, but you know, when it's your time. Also, I've read that it helps with perimenopausal menstrual flow. So ladies, do your research. Look up red raspberry leaf tea. If you're pregnant, you probably shouldn't drink it. It's supposed to help with childbirth, but talk to your doctor. Don't be listening to me because what do I do? I know. I don't know shit. I'm just telling you what I drink. And we know I ain't pregnant. Better not be. We know I ain't pregnant. So just do your own research. But that's what I was sipping on. Now, what were you sipping on is really the question. So friends and kin, for today's jam, I chose this song because I have been in a really weird state, and I'm kind of in a state where I feel a little stuck. You know, sis is in a very strange space lately. Mother's Day is coming, and that's always a humdinger for me, and it's a period of time where I have to actively focus on being strategic around taking care of my mental health. Like, I have to really work hard. I got some life things happening, some health things happening. Listen, sis, I just got some shit happening, okay? And when times like this come, and especially with the conversation that I've been having, with my guest for this episode and the previous episode, Arthur, where we are talking about death, grief, mortality, and also joyful living and being intentional and living a full life. It was just interesting because I'm usually the one who is talking about joy and being intentional, but this time I got to listen and to absorb, and it got me to thinking, you know? I just was thinking a lot.
Jesus, Jesus, Jesus!
Anyway, let me focus before I go off on a tangent.
Stick to the game plan.
Anyway, this was part two of our conversation, and afterwards I was led to just think about, you know, just talking about grief and death. I started thinking about some of the people who are no longer here that would help me when I was going through times like this. And so the song that I chose is a song that my grandfather used to always play when I would come to his house when he lived in this particular apartment. And he would sit by the window and play songs for me, and he would sing, and, you know, we would talk about music, and he would remind me of when I sang on our family reunion cruise and I won the karaoke competition because, contrary to popular belief, I can actually sing. And he would tell me that I sing, he would always say this, that I sing At Last by Etta James way better than Beyonce did for the Obamas, which I thought was hilarious. But I chose this song because he would play it over and over and over and over and over. And every time I hear it, I think of him. And it is I Say a Little Prayer for You by, I'm going to try not to cry. I Say a Little Prayer for You by Aretha Franklin. And a lot of people have covered this song. But, you know, nobody does it like Riri, because she's the original queen bee. And so the words for this song are really beautiful, and it's about love. But for me, it's about my connection to my biggest cheerleader in the... Wait a minute. Give me a second. I'll be right back. Okay. I just had to get myself together for a second before I fell apart on this microphone. So anyway, I was saying that this song is about, for me, it connects me or takes me back to spending time with or brings back memories of, you know, my number one cheerleader, the biggest cheerleader that I've ever had in the entire world, ever in the history of people who supported me in any way and in everything that I did, and that's my Grandpa Chops. And I always make the joke that, you know, like I could poop in the middle of the street and he would be like, you know, whatever my nickname that he called me, which was sometimes it was Red because he would confuse me with my aunt, my grandmother. I guess he figured he called them Red. He might as well call me Red. I don't know why, because we're not the same complexion, but whatever. He'd be like, you know, Red, or, you know, another name. He would call me by my middle name. You shouldn't have did that, you know, but we're going to clean it up and then we're going to go and it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It doesn't matter what I did. By the end of the conversation, it was okay, or he would tell me it was fine that I did it. And his birthday is coming up, so I decided to choose this song to celebrate him early. And because I miss him a lot. So enjoy this song. My favorite part of the song is the way it starts, and it says this is a lot fucking harder than I thought it would be. Give me a second. Listen, I told y'all I got a lot on me. I ain't making this shit up now.
Jesus, Jesus, Jesus.
So anyway, I think I was saying that my favorite part about the song is that the way the song starts, and it starts out with her saying, from the moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. And to me, praying for somebody is the highest form of showing love, or to express love for someone, to pray for someone, to ask God to help them or to bless them or to cover them or to protect them or to heal them. I love that. So anyway, enjoy the song. And of course, the link to the song is in the show notes. You know the drill. It'll be there. Go listen to it, and go listen to it because I'm sure you've listened to the song many times before. But go listen to it and really listen to the words. And listen to how beautiful it is. And then, you know what? Let's just go ahead and get this party started because I'm over here falling apart at the seams. Let's go ahead and get this party started.
There's a light I feel like you bring to this kind of work, a sunshine, if you will, that you bring to it that people may not think about or see when they think about people leaving this realm or themselves leaving this realm. But there is something beautiful about the work that you do. And when I reflect, because I'm telling you, in this process, I've done a lot of reflecting. And when I think about my grandmother leaving, all of the little things like combing her hair,
yes,
and, you know, lotioning her feet,
yes,
or, yeah, all of those little things, or pulling the nurse outside because my grandma was being mean to her, mm, and, you know, saying, please, you know, she is having a hard day. Just all of those little things, when I think back to them now, like, they were such beautiful moments that, of course, I'm never going to get to experience again, but I'm so grateful that I was able to experience them.
Yeah. I'm also really grateful for your presence while you were experiencing them, you know, to be able to think back on those times that you were brushing her hair, or you were
here we go. I told you it was coming.
I'm glad they're here. You know what I mean? Yeah. Let them out. Yeah. Let them out. Let them out. But being able to, like, be present for the little moments when, mm-hmm, our people are dying, it's the last bit, the tangible bit that we'll have of them. And so when people are always asking for advice about, well, what do I do when I'm caregiving somebody or somebody's getting close to the end of life, my encouragement is always to stay as present in your body as possible, because presence in the body means I can be present for this thing that's happening. And the little things that are happening are the things that we'll have to hold on to after they die. So I try to encourage presence as much as possible. And I'm glad to hear that you did.
I did. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. That's interesting that you said that. I often wonder, and you know, and I think about the part of your book where I can't think of his name. I want to say his name was Mike. Mm-hmm. And he had the wife who went to the girls' trip with her friends.
And Elena.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about how as caregivers, we think we know everything,
right?
We know what they need. We know what they want. They don't know what they want because, you know, they're dying, so they don't really know. Yeah. We know what is important to them. It was really lovely to hear, like, him open up and talk to you about, like, how he felt and what he wanted, not versus what she wanted for him, but you know what I mean, in contrast to what she wanted for him. What is there a common thread that you find when people are in the process of leaving, when it comes to, like, things that they want or things that they want to experience, or what they want to feel, what they want to eat, and not necessarily exact foods that they want to eat, but what are some of the things that you find that are important to them to experience in that process, in that time? Going through the process.
I think many of us associate, like, bucket list stuff or things that people might want when they're dying with, like, the big things, right? Like the things that they didn't get to do when they were dying. Mm. One of the questions that I often ask is, what is still undone in your life? And that question gives a lot of responses. And it's a question all of us can ask ourselves right now and should
absolutely
be asking ourselves.
Absolutely, because that's loaded.
What is still undone? What must you do? What must you do? And the answers are rarely about going to see the Mona Lisa or kissing the motherland for the first time.
Yeah.
It's rarely about that. It's more about having spent more time with somebody that they loved, or apologizing to somebody, or, you know, speaking truth with somebody else, or getting their hands in the soil one last time. It has a lot less to do with the big things than we think that it does, which is why the practice of presence that I was talking about before is so important, because it allows us to be, like, present with this really wild experience of life that we have, that people who are leaving it seem to be so much more keenly aware of.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
No, I get it 100%.
Yeah. So it's the little things. It's the little things. It's the little things. Sometimes it's, like, foods from childhood, or the smell of something, or they want to hear their song. It's often in the sensory experience, but the minute things about living.
I get that. That makes sense. And it's funny, as you say that, I think about, like I said, I feel like I've been very reflective in the process of, like, experiencing this book, not just extremely reflective, but what you just said about what in your life is undone. Man,
it's a big one.
Whoa. That is. And I think that it's a beautiful thing for people to, like you said, seeing the Mona Lisa or going to an active volcano and watching it from all those things are great. But will you be able to, I'm from Baltimore. Will you be able to eating a crab cake one last time? Hearing somebody that you love laugh
Yes.
You know, singing your favorite gospel hymn or somebody reading your favorite Bible verse or eating a piece of candy or smelling white diamonds. And I think that when I think about my grandmother wore some
white diamonds.
It's over there on her little table. Oh. Her little white diamonds is sitting on the front of the table. But
yeah,
I think that makes me think about, like, right now, me savoring, like, little moments. Because it's great to go on big trips because I like to travel just like you do. You are a traveling somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And a solo traveler. I love a good solo trip. People don't understand that. And I don't have kids either, sis. And people don't understand when you don't want kids, just leave me the hell alone.
Leave me alone.
Because maybe I just want to be an auntie.
And I'm good
at it. Yeah, it's fun.
It's great. I love being an auntie.
Being an auntie is supreme living.
Yeah.
I can take you back home.
Yeah.
I can have a lot of fun with you.
Yeah.
I can give you alcohol when you get a little older.
Yeah.
Don't tell your mom. Like, you can talk to me about your boyfriends. Oh, if you have a pregnancy scare and you're 21, you can call me and we can work through it. Like, it, you know what I mean? Yes. It's like a safe space.
Yes.
Beyond the mom. Right. I'm okay with that.
Love it.
Prefer it. Please and thank you. It makes me think about those small things in my life to savor, you know. And big trips are fine, and going to brunch with your girlfriends is good, and doing all these grandiose things are good. But what about burning your favorite incense?
Yeah.
Ugh, it makes me happy.
Yeah.
Eating a green apple blow pop.
Yes.
Not on a regular basis because your teeth will fall out, but, like, you know. You know, savoring those moments, hearing, if I could hear my grandmother laugh again.
Yeah.
What? Like, those little things. And it reminds me, I'm telling y'all need to read this book because it will, I mean, if you have any substance in your soul, it will make you really stop and think, like, what the fuck am I doing with my life?
Mm.
Like, not even versus, not even up against, like, what am I doing with my life because I'm going to die soon, or I'm going to die even eventually because, you know, we're all going to die. But in this moment, this is another thing me and my therapist have worked really hard, me trying to remain present and not being focused on the future because I want to control everything. Mm-hmm. But what am I doing right now? The whole thought of dealing with mortality is all about being in the present.
Right.
100%.
100%. And people forget that.
You absolutely know?
They think it's something, like, big out there or something big that we got to do. And it's like, no, it's right here. Dying also happens in an ordinary moment. So does living. Our life is made up of a series of small moments.
But I think people forget, like, when you die, you're dead. Like, it's done for you.
Yep.
Like, and I know that is a little harsh, but, like, it's done for you. Like, at that point, it's about everybody else around you trying to put the pieces back together. But, like, your part is done. And maybe if you believe in reincarnation, maybe you'll come back and get to do it all over again. And I wouldn't want to come back as a human right now, though.
Yeah,
not,
I'm good.
Not the way this works. You would?
No. I said I'm good.
No, yeah. This world sucks. Bring me back as a butterfly or something or a hippopotamus. They have a good time. But I love that this book has really helped me to really focus on, like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing to ensure that the life you live is a life filled with joy, a life filled with the things that you want to do, a life filled with substance, and not substance in the terms of, like, productivity. Because,
right,
you know, Black women love to be busy, don't we?
No.
I'm booked and busy, bitch.
Tired. No, well, I'm tired. I'm laying
you
down.
Tired.
Yeah. I'm laying down. Yeah. I'm sitting down.
Nap time.
Yes.
Even if you don't go to sleep, it's still nap time.
Yeah.
Lay down time. But I love that this book brought me to that space, because it's not a space that I have ever been in, because I don't really think about my own mortality until now.
Okay.
How do you, and I mean, you kind of talked about it when you talked about self-care in the process, but, like, where do you think that you gathered or developed the emotional resilience to do this kind of work?
I think I've been building it for a long time.
Okay.
And I also think that many of us have it. It's just I practice mine quite often.
Mm-hmm.
For people to want to become death doulas, I think we make effective death doulas when we are comfortable in emotional depth And most often that means that I've become, made mine my friends, you know. I'm familiar with them. I try not to shun some. I try to get as comfortable with my shame as I am with my joy, just to allow, you know, all things to exist. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason I named the book briefly Perfectly Human is not only that as a result of being human, that means that we'll die, but it also to give ourselves like the free range to like feel this human thing, to feel mm-hmm. what it's like to be in a body and to have rage and to have like silence and to have mm-hmm. awe and to have anger and vitriol and judgment and all those things. That's all makes us very human. And so the emotional resilience is getting comfortable with like the full gamut of the human experience to me.
Like, you know, many things can be true at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like sometimes, because I know a lot of people who are overthinkers, me being one of them. Do you feel like sometimes people overthink or overprocess loss? In the sense that, like in that moment, like when that person leaves, do you think that they tend to create... how do I say this? Like create more of a narrative around the loss instead of just realizing like the person died because it was their time to die.
Yes. I do think people want to assign all types of different meaning to it when it happens. Mm-hmm. Death is, you know, people die in a lot of fucked up ways lately. Mm-hmm. It's okay. I curse.
Girl, I said just fuck earlier.
Oh, yeah. Just checking. Okay, great.
I didn't hear because it sounds auntie. Like, okay. Aunties cuss.
Right?
Mommies don't curse.
But aunties, this auntie,
I'm
my niece and nephew. I'm just cursing. Okay.
Yeah.
So I was saying that people are dying in all types of fucked up ways.
Right.
And it's important that we try not to assign too much meaning to the way that the death occurs, unless, of course, it's happening in ways that are flying in the face of justice and like, you know, honoring the human. But the stories that people make up around it sometimes can be really detrimental because they make so much meaning around it that ends up creating a lot of suffering for them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure that my aunt listens to this episode.
Great.
There was something that happened when my grandmother passed away. Mm-hmm. And not that you don't want, you know, justice to be served if something was wrong or, you know, if you feel like something was undone.
Yeah.
I just remember having a conversation with my aunt saying that, like, God was ready. It was her time.
Well, like, it's time it is.
Yeah. And so you going through and, you know, if you want to write a letter and if you want to sue somebody and do all of these things, this is recreating the trauma for you over and over and over of your mother's passing. When realistically, like she was tired and God said, you know what? She tired. Let me go ahead and take my baby out of here because this is too much for her. Mm-hmm. And it could have been me being selfish. I remember my aunt called me and was like, what do you think about, you know, like pressing the issue about, you know, this happening? And I was like, I think that if it's something that you want to do, you know, I support you in doing it, but I don't want any parts of it because I think I knew that, you know, this is just going to re-trigger us over and over and over and over and over.
Yeah, yeah.
And we already have so much to deal with and it's so much pain and it's so heavy and we're trying to navigate this new normal, if you will. This is just going to re-traumatize us over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
And I don't think that she ended up going through with it. Okay. And I don't know if she realizes this, but I think that her spirit is much more better off without doing it because it is just re-traumatizing yourself over and over.
Can be, for sure. There is an element called reprocessing where in grief, people do just run over the thing over and over and over again in their heads. And I think for some people, it can be supportive as they like try to hang on to the little bits of how somebody died. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes people also hang on to those things that they thought were less than what that person deserved because it allows them a way to still stay connected in some capacity. You know, it's like, if I'm not angry anymore, did I care or does it matter?
Yeah.
Yes, it still matters. You can let it go. And also you can stay angry if this is what you need in order to still feel like I was with them and I'm down for them and, you know.
Yeah. But you don't think that it is, and I guess I'm feeling where you're, I don't want to like judge and not to be judgmental, but wouldn't it be best for our own like spirits to find other ways to honor them in that way?
I think that other people come to grief a lot of different ways. Yeah. And I've seen so much of it. You know, I've seen the people that are just out for blood after somebody dies, even though what I heard sounds like a very normal process to me. They're mad at hospices and people for morphine, and they think that the morphine killed them, and they're just trying to get people. And it all looks to me like an expression of grief. And all grief to me is valid. Even the expressions I don't like or understand, because there's a lot of them that I don't understand. But I'm like, you're grieving. Ouch. Can you direct it toward the thing that actually hurts and not at me or not at this person or, you know?
I would imagine that you deal with that a lot.
Like, a bit.
Yeah. And so can you tell us about like one time where that happened, where the person that after your client had, because who is the client? The client is the person who is actually leaving, not the family member who,
It depends.
Okay.
It depends. Sometimes the client is a family member. Sometimes the family member has called for support with their person who's dying. And there's,
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say that there's certainly been times when people have been in their grief, angry at me, or throwing some energy my way one way or another. It was also a son who kept asking me out insistently. And don't get me wrong, I know I am fly. And at the same time, I was like, you were trying to find a way to just stay close to this person who died through thinking that this is going to be the thing. This ain't it. Like, it's not for you anyway, but this ain't it.
Right.
But there's been anger. There was one son of a client who also reacted in a lot of anger toward me, thinking that I maybe hastened his mother's death. But she was getting pain medication, and they gave her morphine near the end of her life, and it sedated her, which allowed her to die. But he thought that the sedation is what eventually killed her, and that the morphine killed her. And I was giving, you know, some information for them to consider, and they considered to give her more, and he thought it was my fault. This is grief. He's grieving.
And how do you deal with that? You touch the door jamb, and you go home, and take your bath. And eat your chips.
Yeah, and eat my chips. And maybe have a little tequila.
Okay, hey. Nothing is wrong. Reposado or añejo?
Reposado.
Every day. Every time,
reposado. Yeah, every straight time. Up, too. Not even a lemon or a lime. Just straight up.
What's your favorite tequila?
Clase Azul.
Okay.
I got good taste. You?
I had a friend of mine on the show. She had actually been to prison. She was a teacher and actually a special ed administrator, and she had been to prison. And so we talked about that. And she, I had one at her house, and I want to say it was, I was just telling somebody about it the other day, and I can't think about it.
Okay.
But I don't know what the hell it's called, but if I think about it, I'll do it. Absolutely. And if necessary, I'll email it to you because it was so smooth.
Wow.
Like, it was so smooth.
That sounds
I don't see how people drink things like Casamigos. Like, that is not even right. It's wrong to drink. It's bad for you. I'd rather drink Patron than to drink Casamigos. I have a question. As a Black woman in this field, are there any like unique perspectives or just insights that you may bring to end of life care and support? As a Black woman, as a sister, what do you bring to this whole process that maybe another person could not bring?
Well, for starters, I think because of the intersections of my identity, it's much easier for me to honor the intersections of other people's identities.
Absolutely.
I've heard way too many people say things like race doesn't matter and how we die. And I think that is utter and complete bullshit.
Okay.
Because when I am supporting somebody at the end of life, I'm honoring the totality of their lived experience for all it was, not just the experiences I'm down with or understand or can identify with, but who they actually were. That means how they showed up in life. That means that I have to look at their whole thing, their entire thing, including their race, including their gender, gender expression, sexual identity, like all those things go into it, ability, disability, all everything. Everything is going into it. And it's much easier, I think, for me to be aware of other people's because I sit in this position as opposed to all the white people who over the years have told me that it doesn't matter or they try to lump everybody in together or provide like the same care for everybody. Mm-hmm. One minor example, in my doula training program, I learned about dry shampoo. They said that you're supposed to use dry shampoo to wash the hair of the deceased. It was the very first time I'd heard about dry shampoo in my life. I was shocked and awed, what is this? And they explained it to me. And I thought, y'all better not put any dry shampoo in my locks and my hair. It will go in there and it will never come out.
And it'll never come out. And then you'll be dead in your afterlife, whatever you believe, with powder in your hair.
Looking like an ashy-headed mess.
Yes.
And that's not what I'm trying to do.
Because what if there's no place for you to dye your locks when you get there?
Thank you. Then yeah. What? Ashy-headed mess.
No.
And so I thought, well, this is clearly a situation where we have not considered everybody's hair. We haven't considered everybody.
Of course. Really,
they say this is how you do it. And I was like, no, that can't be it for everybody. What else is available? So that's a minor thing, but it shows up in so many other different ways, mm-hmm. you know, in cultures and customs and rituals and, you know, just even calling my elderly clients Miss or Ms. or don't start with their first name, you know, like it's a tiny things that show respect, but are also markers of culture that I am privy to that a lot of other people don't even know is an issue or something to consider.
Right. I get that. That makes sense. And I could see people trying to box it all in and say it doesn't really matter. And yeah,
it matters.
I don't know how that works.
It all,
absolutely, it matters. Yeah. And I know as a Black woman, of course, I'm biased, but Black women are superheroes, not superheroes that are here to save everybody.
No.
That is not our job.
No.
I'll say we are. We're like the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a lot of powers, great powers, not necessarily the Magneto X-Men, but the,
right.
You know, we have a lot of great powers. And also to be able to just see people for who they are because yeah. of how we are treated, how we are seen. And so I get that. Are there any cultural or, and that tequila is called El Tesoro.
El Tesoro.
Yes.
Write that down. Thank you.
Get you some. It's delicious.
I'm going to order it.
And she is so funny. She lived in Mexico City or in Mexico, and she like went to all these tequila tastings when she was in her early 20s. Yeah. And so I'm going to go ahead and say that she probably knows what she's talking about because she's knee deep in the tequila game. It's so delicious.
That's
like, it's
down.
Really good. Mm-hmm. Write it down. It's good.
Now.
Can you discuss or can you think of any cultural or spiritual rituals or beliefs that you have found meaningful or helpful when you are supporting people through this process that you, Alua, bring to the table?
I think one thing that I bring, which is perhaps the most supportive, is the absence of it, at least externally.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I am as blank of a slate as possible, and I don't mm-hmm. mean that doesn't mean that I come with my trauma and my pain and my history mm-hmm. and my Blackness and everything else, mm-hmm. rather it means that I can allow people to have their experience and share mm-hmm. with me what they believe to mm-hmm. help them weed through it. That's what's most supportive.
Okay.
You know, also I think just naming it what I see it as and not using euphemisms or not couching it in any terms that highlight what my belief system is.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't say transition or passed away or anything. I say dead mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. died on purpose.
Listen,
just
straight from the hip.
Just keep it what it mm-hmm. is. Keep it 100 yeah. all the time because it also just keeps things neutral enough so that people can put what they believe into the pot and I can help yeah. them stir it and kick right. something out for themselves.
Yeah. I get that. I love that. I never thought about that. And of course, you know, me being the reflective person I am, I'm thinking about, like, what do I say? I definitely said a transition a lot. During this conversation, I've said leaving a
mm-hmm.
lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that is probably based in my own trauma and
mm-hmm.
my own grief process
mm-hmm.
and the where I am now in the grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
That is interesting. That is, I probably could never do that.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that I could do your work. Because one, I'd be in there crying like a fucking
That's
baby.
Okay. I do,
with
too.
With the people?
I do, too. And can I tell you a story? A quick one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think we're running out of time.
Yeah.
A while back, I was with a client and her sister.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not elderly. They were close enough in age. They were Black. And I felt very identified with them. And, you know, you always hear that that's not what you're supposed to do. And I certainly teach
right.
the students that I work with that perhaps people that you feel closely biographically associated to, you probably
Absolutely.
Shouldn't be working with. Because really
okay.
hard to separate the space between the two of you.
Absolutely. So I get that.
Client was dying. Her sister was there. I'm boohooing because the sister is crying because I'm thinking about my own sister dying. All right. I had excused myself for a while, came back. I still couldn't get it together. So we wrapped up the visit and I went home. And then I felt awful. Like, look at me. I'm meant to create and hold this container. And I collapsed directly into it. Felt awful. Like, maybe I'm not cut out for this. I don't know if I can do this anymore like this. A few days later, sister calls to tell me how grateful she was that I showed some emotion and some humanness because doctors and other people had been coming into the home, they'd been coming into the hospital, and they would come, they'd do their job, and they'd leave. Mm-hmm. And she said that it was the first time that she felt that her sister's death mattered to somebody.
Mm. I get that. That makes sense.
Massively.
Because I would be falling out, crying, not... You know, do you want me to go get something for you? Like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Do you want me to go get y'all some rolls or something? Because do you want me to find somebody to make some meatballs? Because like Black people got to have meatballs at the thing. You need some rice, something. I think the last question or the last few questions I have is I want to know if there are any experiences or lessons that you have learned in this process that have helped you like on your own, like journey to self-love or your own, not necessarily self-love, but your own like mental health journey. Like what has doing this work done for you and your own mental health?
It was like we were talking about earlier, just giving myself the grace to have, to be who I am. Mm-hmm. You know, and to have the difficult experiences, I've tried to tidy myself for so long and to not be frustrated.
Like them lawyer outfits when you want to dress like Betsy, what's
Johnson.
Her name? Betsy Johnson.
Exactly.
And you got to dress like Boston Legal.
Exactly. That's not for me. That's not for me. I can get anxious. That's okay. Yeah. It's a new thing that I'm discovering about myself, but I'm allowing myself the grace to like be human, to like have a full range of emotions and have just like a full experience here. I think
there's
anytime,
freedom in that.
There's so much freedom in it.
Yeah.
There's so much freedom.
There's full freedom in that.
Absolutely. And what
giving
I did
yourself
for a long
the
time.
Grace,
yep.
Giving yourself the grace to be human.
To be human.
Mm-hmm. And what did you say? You said for a long time you...
For a long time I tidied, or I tried to like keep in little boxes or wouldn't allow people to see all parts of me. And now I'm like, well, it helps that I'm in this really beautiful relationship that holds a lot of space for me to be the full gamut of who I am, but it also allows me to be the fullest of who I am all the time. And there's a lot of freedom in that too.
In a relationship, you in a relationship, like you got a
romance.
Book.
Yeah, I got a book.
Because you love the love.
I do. And this
I love
one is
that.
So good. This one's so
I love
good.
That. Yeah. I love that. I swear to God, I feel like I know you. I do. The last thing I want to ask is, what advice would you give to any of my friends and kin that are trying to understand or have a deeper understanding of self and acceptance, one in the loss of grief and in their own, I'm sorry, one in the face of grief and loss, but also in understanding their own mortality?
They're the same, which is the constant, and you'll hear me say this 100 times, but grace. You know, there's a reason I call the business Going with Grace. Grace, grace, this thing is hard and we're all doing the best that we can most of the time.
Yeah.
And sitting on the precipice and knowing that you're about to lose somebody that you care a lot about is difficult. Mm-hmm. And you might experience yourself in a lot of ways that you're not comfortable with or haven't met yet. You might meet a new version of yourself and that's okay too. Grief does have the capacity to crack us open and where a new sense of self can emerge. And so to stay patient with you and your process, and grief is a lifelong experience. It's a lifelong experience.
It never goes away.
It doesn't go anywhere.
No.
You just learn how to integrate it differently. You learn how to move with it, but it doesn't go anywhere.
It just evolves, it feels like.
Yeah,
into
as
different
you evolve
things.
Too.
Yeah. Into different things. I'm trying to think of it like a butterfly that lives forever, that maybe changes. Like it may be a monarch at first, and then it turns into the little white ones, and then it turns into the pretty blue ones, and it just evolves over time because it doesn't go away. And I think that initially I thought that, oh, by now I would be okay. No, that's not how it works.
That's not how it works. It's been 10 years since my brother-in-law died. 10 years. And I was thinking about him recently and I choked up.
Pete.
Peter, yeah.
Listen, I'm here with you.
You're with me. You're in it.
I'm either, we are friends. We went to school together.
All of that.
You lived in Bethesda. Maybe I lived up the street.
That must have been
I am a part of the Arthur family. I know what's going on.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
We are here. I want to say thank you so much for being on Hand Me My Purse with me today. I want you to tell people how they can find you. This is your time to do your plug. And sometimes for Black women, we have a really fucking hard time, you know, doing that. But like, it's your turn. I want you to tell people where to find you on social media, and they better follow you and subscribe and do all the things, or I'm going to beat them up. I'm not, because I don't really like to fight. I haven't been a fight since I was 12. But I will fuck somebody up if I have to.
You know what I'm saying? Easy. No problem.
It wouldn't be a problem.
No problem. And I'm big, too. No problem.
I am big. I'm a big girl.
Yeah.
I'm a big lady.
Yeah.
Like, I ain't going down without a fight. Yeah, no. One of my coworkers is so funny. He has a white van. And I was like, this van is kind of making me uncomfortable. He said, you better be careful. I said, if you get me in that white van, something as big as, and I pointed to another coworker, is going to come out of my nose. I said, because fat ladies, you ain't getting me in there. If I get in there, it's by choice. I'm going to fuck you up on the way in the van.
For sure.
You're going to say, I should have left this big bitch alone.
Because I'm
going to try to kill you on the way to you taking me to the van.
Sure. Kidnap defense.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
How can the people find you? And tell them one more time the name of the book.
The name of the book is Briefly, Perfectly Human. Mm-hmm. Go to your independent bookstores and find it, please, because those are folks that are working real hard to make their dreams come true as well. So please go to an independent bookstore. If you must, go to Amazon to get it. You can find it on audio as well if you'd like to hear me talk it out to you.
I recommend you do both, because she is a Black woman and we want to support her, because I'm definitely going to buy the written copy. But I definitely recommend, if you want the fullness of the experience of the book, to listen to it.
Listen to it. Read it. Mm-hmm. Take in my sentences, because I worked really hard to craft them.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me also at goingwithgrace.com. It is our business website where you'll find a number of courses and offerings and meditations and journaling experiences for you to work with your mortality, to sink into grief, to work with the experience of grief. And if you'd like to learn how to support other people through death and dying and grief and loss as well. Yeah.
Awesome. Can they find you on social media, or you're not really a social media girl?
Definitely Going with Grace, with underscores between the words, because otherwise you'll end up at some yellow lab in Kentucky. That is not
me.
Got it. and then also me at Elua Loves Life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
It's true.
I love that.
It's
well,
true.
I enjoyed this, and I told you, I feel like I know you, and that, you know, I knew Peter, and I know your niece, and you and your niece have the same birthday.
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, and I feel like it.
Your
parents were missionaries.
Yeah,
like, all
it.
Of the things.
Everything.
All of the things. Great. I appreciate you taking your time, your West Coast time, out with this East Coast girl with a West Coast spirit. And I wish you all of the best. And I'm definitely going to go to goingwithgrace.com and see what kind of resources you have. And I'm going to share it with every fucking person in my family, because we are all dealing with a lot of grief. We have had a lot of grief over the past, I would say, decade. And I'm going to suggest to them, we have a family wellness call. I'm going to suggest to them that they all go on and see if there's something there that touches them, or that they feel like that they can connect to. So thank you so much, Elua.
Thank you.
I appreciate you. The tequila is called El Tesoro.
I wrote it down.
Absolutely. Have some. Have a shot. Have a shot for my grandma.
What's her name?
Shirley.
Shirley, Miss Shirley. Mm-hmm. I absolutely will.
Absolutely. And thank you so much again. And congratulations on your new relationship.
Thank you.
And if you get married, invite me, because I'll show up.
I trust you will. And I'll have your tequila there too. Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you
so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right, so friends and kin, today's question, I like this because this person was real simple.
A few of the questions that I've been having coming in haven't been as long and drawn out and dramatic. They've been simple questions, actually, which I like. And so, but I do love the drama. Don't get it fucked up. I love the drama. So anyway, this question says, Mimi, when it comes to romantic relationships and love, do you believe it is true that you can actually love two people at the same time? And that is from Kanisha from Cleveland, Ohio. Whew, this is tricky because most people are going to say no. But personally, I think that that is complete and utter
bullshit. Bullshit.
I feel like love is love in its purest form when it's real, when it's true. Love cannot be bound that way. And as I've gotten older and spent a lot of time, you know, paying attention to relationships and patterns and societal norms and, you know, just maturing and talking to God about what love is and getting an understanding of what love is and experiencing love in all different forms, love cannot have limits and walls and ceilings. Love is free. Love is without form. It's amorphous. And that is what the beauty of love is, true love. It's without restriction, and we are constantly trying to put or place restrictions on love and to give love a form, but we can't because love is free. Love is like wind. Love is like the ocean. It's deep and it's shallow. It's dark and it's clear. It's black, it's blue, it's green, it's brown, it's green. You know, in other words, like, you can't put a restriction on it. Water is water. Even if it freezes, it's still water. Heat or the sun is going to melt it and it's just going to be water again. So I just think that if your love is true and it's pure, that's the thing. If it's pure love that doesn't have, what's the word I'm looking for? If it's love without an agenda, love without an ulterior motive, then it's free. It doesn't take form. And there are no restrictions that you can put on it. You can't restrict or contain the air or the wind. So, and if you can, and there's some kind of wind restrictor or wind container that some tech person made, like, okay, whatever. You know what I mean. But I definitely believe that you can love two people at once. As they say, two things can be true at the same time. So, and I know because I've loved two people at the same time. I have. But the difference is that love is also actionable. So, you know, ultimately, love is it's not just a feeling. There are actions that go along with the feelings. There are the experiences that you create as a result of your feelings. So I just think that you can love two people because love is not a corset. You know, you can't put a corset around love. It's not a muffin top. So I definitely believe that, Kanisha, you can love two people at the same time. You can love three people at the same time. You know, why not? Like, how do you stop it? How do you stop love? How do you stop loving somebody? Like, unless you are intentionally removing yourself from them. And even if you do remove them from your life, and like, if you really love them, do you ever stop loving them? Because I'm going to be really honest. My high school boyfriend, may he rest in peace, I still love him. And he's not even alive anymore. I still love him. I do. If I've ever loved you, I still love you. Because I really, really loved you. Now, if I didn't love you and I just liked you or I lusted for you or you know, if it wasn't pure, raw, true love, then I don't care. Like, whatever. But if I love you, I love you forever. And that goes for my friends, my family. I ain't got to talk to you no more for me to still love you. There are several people that I don't engage with anymore. And they are friends and or family. And I still love them. And I will love them until the day that life is no more. But I ain't got to have them around me. I still love them, though. So, yes, Kanisha from Cleveland, Ohio, I do believe that you can love two people at once. Now, what you do with that love is a different story. That's where it gets tricky. Because if you're married and you love your wife or your husband and you are in love with somebody else, you know, that's where you got to figure that out. What does that look like for you? What does that look like for your relationships? Both of them. And if you married, you got a wife or husband, and you got somebody else, and then you start loving somebody else, that gets tricky. And that's where the intentional action comes in. But love is not bound. Love can't be bound, so you can't stop it. And that's just what I think. But what do I know? Friends, again, for today's We Got to Do Better segment, I'm just going to keep it on trend, and I'm going to keep it on trend for the rest of season four, which is where we are. And I'm going to pull from my new favorite book, Black Liturgies, by Cole Arthur Riley, who is a Black woman in her 30s, and she is an amazing human being. But this excerpt here is the benediction prayer from the chapter on joy. And it says, "Be at peace. May you access the fullness of a joy that allows for both an interior solemnity and levity. May you learn to be at rest with yourself, able to access a peace that carries memory but isn't chained to the past. And may you laugh, allowing the mystery of joy to steady you always and keep you from despair. Amen."
Jesus, Jesus, Jesus.
Now I'm going to read that to you one more time. One time for the one time, because this is all in my chest. Okay, excuse me. I'm trying to get something out of my eye. And again, this is a benediction prayer from the chapter on joy. "Be at peace. May you access the fullness of a joy that allows for both an interior solemnity and a levity. May you learn to be at rest with yourself, able to access a peace that carries memory but isn't chained to the past. And may you laugh, allowing the mystery of joy to steady you always and keep you from despair. Amen." Ashe. And so it is so. Friends, again, the first thing I want to do is say thank you to God first, because God is supreme, and I recognize and appreciate the grace that God extends to me every single day of my Black ass life. I want to say thank you to my people, to my folks, to each and every one of you that's been rocking with me since the first day, the first sound, the first trailer, March the 1st of 2020. First, 1-1-1-1-E-1-1-1. Thank you, and thank you again. I appreciate you for being here. And even if you weren't here on March the 1st of 2020 and you just started listening today, whatever today is, I am grateful for you and I appreciate you. Either way you cut it up, I'm thankful for my family, my friends and kin, all of my supporters, however you support me. And of course, most importantly, every single one of you guys that are out there listening. I love y'all so much. And it is nothing short of an honor, a privilege, and a blessing. And you know what else it is? A lesson. for me to share my time and my energy with you, especially if you keep coming back to share your time and your energy with me. And I look forward to the next time that we get to do this with one another, which will be next Tuesday. Now, before you exit out of whatever streaming service you're using to listen to this, stop what you're doing. And if you haven't already done so, look for the subscribe or follow button. Click on it if it's an option on the streaming service where you're listening. And then I want you to go on over to Instagram and Threads and then follow me at handmemypurse_podcast. Also follow me on Twitter or X at @HMMP_podcast. And on Facebook, just search Hand Me My Purse Podcast. If by chance you listen on a streaming service or medium that allows you to do so, please rate and review the show or give it a thumbs up if you can. Friends, and can be sure to share Hand Me My Purse with your friends, your loved ones, and even your enemies, because the best way for people to find out about this show is by you guys telling them all about it. So tell a friend to tell a friend to do what? Tell a friend. Submit your questions for the Straight Facts segment by clicking on the link in my show notes that says submit a question for Straight Facts, or click the link in the Instagram profile and look for the button that directs you to submit a question. And who knows, your question may be featured on an upcoming show. Also, I want you to remember that show notes are always available in the episode description wherever you're listening to the show. Be sure to take a look at the show notes, because that's where I put all of the links that I mentioned and any other information that I want to share with you guys. Just so you know, the music for Hand Me My Purse is provided by none other than West Baltimore's own Gloomy Tunes. Last but not least, I want to give a big old shout out to my producers. Together we make up Randall Banjo and the Dirty Throats. And I look forward to you looking forward to listening to Hand Me My Purse, the podcast, each and every Tuesday. And I'm out this bitch. Peace.
Hand Me My Purse is a production of iHeart Podcasts. For more shows from iHeart Podcasts, visit the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, hosted by MC8 and Big Steel. It's every Thursday,
I already know.
A podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap.
Let's go.
Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.